Well, it's been a big weekend for dance across Australia. The 21st Australian Dance Awards were announced, and here to talk us through them is choreographer and Hub Dance commentator Gideon Obojanic. G'day, Gideon.
Hey, Michael.
Was it a big occasion?
I believe it was. It was in Brisbane, and I couldn't attend, but I got a lot of texts and a lot of social media was happening.
You should be here, Gideon, they're saying. What a night we're having. What a meezer. It used to be a very Sydney-centric thing. Has it broadened out since?
It was. Well, it began with Ausdance New South Wales back in the 90s, and then it's become national only a few years after that. But yes, it was very much about a Sydney thing that grew and grew. So yeah, right. It's a national thing.
So who decides now? Who picks the winners?
There are a group of panelists, I think probably around 12 or 13, and they are in all states and territories, and they range from teaching, academic, artistic directors, choreographers, but being from Ausdance, it tends to be in the teaching sector a lot, and then some professional dancers as well.
I mean, we should say we say it was very Sydney centric, but in 1997 you won because you were running the Melbourne company Chunky Move. You had got an award, didn't you?
I did. Well, actually, I just moved from Sydney, so maybe
it
was still a hangover from Sydney, and I shared it with
Stephen Page from Bangarra.
Yes, that's right. In those days, Bangarra was relatively young with Stephen at the helm, and Chunky was brand new, and we shared that first inaugural prize.
That's a good double act. All right, let's look at the prizes. Outstanding performance by a female dancer went to...
Yes, that went to Yana Castillo from Australian Dance Theatre, and it was for a show, Construct, which was actually originally choreographed by Tanya Liedker. She was announced as the Sydney Dance Company's new artistic director and tragically passed away before that happened. And that work was one of the last works she made. And ADT has brought that work back. And it was a stunning piece. An outstanding performance by a male dancer went to Beau Dean Riley Smith for Benelong Bangarra's production. I didn't see it live, but I've seen it on video. And it's a beautiful performance. By him.
Yes, me too. I've seen it on video and absolutely staggering. In fact, we met him here in the show. Now, I'll save you the embarrassment of telling us who the award for outstanding performance by a company went to. It went to Dance North for a tractor, which isn't about a piece of farm machinery. I've made that joke before. It's a tractor, if you see what I mean, something that attracts, which was choreographed by Gideon himself and Gideon's partner, Lucy Guerin. So congratulations. Lucy told us about this earlier in the year. It was inspired by a trance performance you saw.
Yes. Well, a few years ago, I went to Java, to Far Eastern Java with Sanyawa, which ended up being actually the musicians that we did attractor with. But it was to watch this traditional performance It's pre-Islam. It's animism in the foothills of Eastern Java, and basically, over a number of hours, these young men and some women go into trance through dance and are possessed by the their ancestors for a period of time, and it's quite amazing and shocking and interesting. But one of the things that interested me, being in the village for a couple of days, was this sense of participation, this very blurred line between performers and people who watch, the ability for people who are watching to join in and for performers to sit down and have a cigarette as they do there and play instruments. And so there's this constant exchange. And so when we made a tractor with Sanyawa a couple of years later, we were very much influenced by this idea of people coming on stage and literally joining in.
Maybe the oddness isn't there. Maybe the oddness is on our side of the cultural divide, with the idea that the audience is over here and the performers are over there, and we all sit very still and don't join in.
That's right. And it's really been something that in my work over the last, since leaving Chunky Move 6 years ago, I've been far more interested in this idea of the role of the professional and the amateur, the viewer and the virtuosic, and where those things meet together, because dance, in fact, is more of a practiced art form traditionally than something to be watched separately. It's usually combined with other forms and people joining in.
Yes. The Lifetime Achievement Award, let's go back to the awards, went to dance educator Athol Willoughby. Tell us about him.
Well, Athol Willoughby is an educator in dance. He's predominantly, his career spans, oh, I imagine from the 1960s. And I knew Athol because he worked in the Cecchetti ballet method.
So tell us about Cecchetti, because it's one of the big schools of dance, isn't it? Ballet, classical ballet.
So my understanding, and I'm not, you know, my ballet background is okay, but it's not thorough. That there's basically two modes of practice in Australia. There's the RAD, Royal Academy of Dance, which I think initially comes from the UK, and then there's the Cecchetti method, which comes from Europe, from Italy originally. And RAD is, well, the Cecchetti people would say that RAD is a more formal style of learning ballet, and Cecchetti is a more expressive, artistic. It regards that aspect of dancing very strongly in the marking. And Athol was, and maybe continues to be, one of the people who was an assessor. And I remember being, as a young dancer, you'd get these cassettes, I'm talking about in the 80s, with Athol Willoughby's voice, and he would, you know, he would have this very sonorous, plummy voice, and he would introduce the exercise and then the piano would start. And so all the young people knew about Athol, but very few people had ever seen him. And so when he comes into the room...
This is fantastic. This is like a film, the guy who no one's seen. So people have got these cassettes, I guess, are they?
So all over the suburbs around Australia, people have these cassettes of Athol Willoughby.
They're putting the old cassette player, pressing go, and the thing
That's
goes
right.
clunk.
Yes, and you're at the bar and you say, Ronde Jambe en l'air, ready? And then the piano would kick in and you would do your exercise. But then when you were being assessed, sometimes people would say, Athol Willoughby's coming.
Oh, I'm so disappointed we don't have one of these tapes.
It was kind of terrifying. And it's a bit like radio. You hear voices, but you never know what they look like. So Athol used to arrive in these, I remember, a pair of boots and a big jumpsuit and a beard, and completely contradictory to what I would expect to see.
Kim's the producer today. Have a look online and see if you can find one of these and load it in, and we'll play some before we go.
Anyway, he's been an extraordinary asset to dance in Australia, and with his great work, there's been many, literally hundreds of professional dancers who have trained with Athol through his tapes. And
all right, we're going to do a story on this. Listener, if you've had experience of the Cecchetti method, especially using the tapes, it's the cassettes I want to focus on.
Yes.
Get in touch with us. Send us a voice memo. Just go along to our website and it explains to you how to send a voice memo. You do it by sending us an email on your phone, basically, sending us a audio on your phone. And, we'll recall what it's like to learn the Cecchetti method on cassette. I'm so pleased you came in, Gideon. You've given us a story idea.
Well, there's some things you can't unremember.
Stephanie Lake is here. Hello, Stephanie.
Good morning.
Have you ever learned to dance from a tape?
No. Well, I did ballet when I was training at VCA, but we did Vaganova, I think. Is that what it's called?
Oh,
the Vaganova. Russian, yeah.
Oh, there's another method. There's another they keep one. Coming
absolutely
in.
Absolutely torturous. It's really right. specific. Tiny little angles of the head and hands. I couldn't get it.
Oh,
I failed, actually.
Australian Ballet School does the same.
Yeah,
that's
it
right.
was really, really hard.
So now we've got a third method to add to our list, haven't we?
Sure,
we've got
Cecchetti,
we've got the Royal Academy of Dance method. What's your one called?
Vaganova, I think.
Vaganova.
Does that ring a bell? Yeah.
No, you obviously weren't paying attention. Nevertheless,
Stephanie. I did all right.
Well, you've done all right over the weekend. You've got the astounding achievement in choreography at the Dance Awards. Congratulations.
It's true. Thank you so much.
So your work is called Pile of Bones, which sounds a bit ominous.
Well, it was actually, the Pile of Bones was the name of the city, the capital city of the province that I grew up in, Saskatchewan in Canada.
Really?
And I only found that out recently. Yeah, it's Regina is the name of the city, but it used to be called Pile of Bones. And I'm sure it's a very dark history, of course.
The city used to be called Pile of Bones.
It did, yes. The town that I grew up in was called Indian Head. There were lots of odd named towns. There was a town called Eyebrow.
Right.
I'm not kidding.
Raised in Eyebrow.
Eyebrow. I think there's Elbow even. My favourite was Moose Jaw.
Yeah, it's quite a joint, Elbow. All right. So your work, Pile of Bones. Actually, I've seen some of this online, and the variety of styles that you've used is gobsmacking. Forget about Cecchetti. We've got robot dancing. We've got dancers being all sort of loose-limbed and sort of slouching around. And we've got a dancer covered in post-it notes who dances in a wild way and the post-it notes fly off all directions. I felt as though you'd used up all your ideas in one show.
I've got more.
Have you even more?
I have got more. Yeah, they're coming soon.
So was there a point to all this diversity? What holds it all together?
I don't know. I'm a bit of a maximalist. A bit of a bowerbird maybe. And I get excited by the dancers in the studio, and so new things just keep evolving, and then I want to include them all. But I need to. I actually, my ambition as I mature, I want to become more streamlined, less ideas, more focused.
Right.
Yes.
I think a good piece of advice, Stephanie, would be save that idea till next time. not that I'm criticising your work, but just, you know, you run out of ideas, your creative stamina gets exhausted. Have you ever done that, Gideon? Have you ever thought, that's a good idea, but we might save that till next time?
Well, I remember starting when I was younger with a ton of ideas. I'd throw them all in a bucket and I would have this work that would, you know, verge from one thing to the next. But more recently, maybe because I'm running out of ideas, I tend to concentrate on maybe one or two things and
now, I don't think you should play that down and say I'm running thin, because I think in the end, the great works have a kind of discipline of structure and concept. And actually doing less but doing it powerfully is better than just keeping the thing whipping along to show off all your sort of terrific ideas. There is something about going deep rather than saying the energy comes from, you know, if you don't like this bit, that's okay. We've got another trick coming up in 30 seconds.
But I have to say Steph's capacity for detail and the idea of innovation in the way that dancers move and how they perform is really quite extraordinary. So
what sort of things to talk about her, since she's here? What sort of things does she does that are evidence of this?
Well, I think Steph, if I may speak, in my opinion of Steph, I mean, she was and continues to be an extraordinary dancer, a very high fidelity in regards to the detail of movement. But not only that, is very expressive, and you feel like you see her, she connects with you. So there's a lot of technical dancers who you don't connect with necessarily, and I think that extends into Steph's choreography when she works with dancers.
Does that resonate with you, Stephanie?
That's literally the nicest thing Gideon's ever said to me. I've worked with him for 15 years.
Okay, now we'll talk about him. What's the worst thing he's ever said to you?
Oh God, let's not go there.
Oh, come on.
Gideon's a huge hero of mine, and I've worked with him for a very long time. He's a massive influence.
He's a lovely man.
And
we
so
wouldn't let him on the show.
Amazing, absolutely amazing. So yeah. I'm really chuffed
so
to
this,
hear that.
This, so Gideon was just saying that you have this ability to connect with the audience, that we meet you as a person. Mm. I mean, often choreographers talk about dancers as bodies, and that always feels to me like a very dehumanising way to talk about somebody.
We don't mean it that way.
But you can see what I mean.
Yes.
You know, with someone's just a kind of moving machine.
Mm.
I feel a bit alienated when I see that kind of work. I actually do like to meet people. Mm. I love to sit there and think, oh, there's humanity rather than abstract movement being shared.
Yeah, me too. Yeah, yeah, absolutely, absolutely. And I think the dancers that I'm really drawn to bring that as well to the process. And the dancers that I enjoy most on stage, you feel like you're seeing something of them. Even if it is abstract work, you see something of them.
Yeah.
I think dance does oscillate between people, you know, characters or people fluxing between being bodies in space and then back again. That's what happens in dance. Mm. You see a person standing there, and as they begin to move and they begin to merge with the light and sound and music, and then they return back again. So they are, in a way, their own instrument. And so it's a way of shifting into from the tangible into the ethereal and back again. And dance keeps doing that.
What's the role of the face in that transition? I mean, sometimes dancers dance with a very impassive face, and sometimes they're quite expressive with their faces.
Well, that's right. And in classical dance, the face, you know, it doesn't matter what kind of classicism, particularly in Indian classical dance, but also in Western classical dance, the face plays a very important role about conveying what the character is feeling or going through at that time. When we go into contemporary dance, the face is not necessarily the body. The person literally does disappear into the body, and the body becomes a body in space. So therefore, being expressive with one's face is not necessarily a useful thing at that moment. But being a piece of wood doesn't work either. So it's about this oscillation.
Right, right. Don't smile. if Gideon's running the show, don't smile. All right, now, Stephanie, you've got a new work opening soon as part of the Melbourne Fringe Festival, which is called Colossus, and it sounds absolutely colossal. Here's some music from it. If I'm going to dance to this, I feel as though frenetic movement is required. What are we doing with Colossus? There's a cast of thousands in this. How many people have you got?
I've got 50.
That's a lot.
I'd love more. 1,000 would be great. But 50 on the Fairfax stage is plenty.
So the Fairfax is the smaller theatre at the
Melbourne Arts Centre. That's right.
So what's your vision for this one?
Well, this is a work I've wanted to make for a really, really long time. I've always been really, I've loved the capacity of big casts. And since I was a student, I've always been trying to rope everyone into my works. But you know, for financial reasons, it's not always possible to have big casts. So this is something I've been trying to make happen for many, many years. And I'm just really thankful that the Arts Centre and Fringe Festival have come on board.
So these 50 dancers, where have you got them from?
I've got them from a combination of places, mostly from VCA, Victorian College of the Arts, and Transit Dance, which is another training institute, and then a few others who've volunteered to be part of it. So, yeah, it's great. One of the nicest things about the project, actually, is bringing together these dancers that wouldn't normally meet. So I'm hoping there are some future collaborations in
and
there.
And is there an idea or a program or a premise that's holding this together?
I'm interested in this idea of it kind of being a microcosm for the way we coexist in society more broadly, I guess, and the kind of beauty and ugliness of that coexistence, what it is to live in close proximity with people. And
society meaning urban society.
Yeah, essentially. How we live close to each other and to, you know.
And are you optimistic about that?
Oh, absolutely. Right. Yeah, it's a total ode to joy. It's going to end with a... It's celebratory.
Because if you think about, you know, if we go back to the 1920s, there's a lot of dystopian visions of the city, which have stayed with us through the decades. But there is a kind of new joy in urban life, entering art practice, rather than seeing the crowd as impersonal, somehow seeing as a sort of solidarity.
I think it's kind of miraculous. It's amazing that we all live together so closely and for the most part, it's quite successful.
Yes. Well, there's some cities are so. I mean, Melbourne is a city that's extraordinarily successful in its diversity. What about you, Gideon? Are you an optimist about the urban environment?
I am an optimist. You know, I grew up in the country and moved to the city as a young child, and I think I've experienced both. Absolutely. And I remember years ago reading the book of Elias Canetti, Crowds and Power, I think written in the 1950s. And it was the first piece of writing about crowds and the behaviour of crowds that separated out the politics and the social reasons for those things to happen. He looked at it really as a kind of a flow dynamics of how packs form and how leaders and for choreographer that was really fascinating because it was the first time you someone's actually analysing the movement of large masses.
So Elias Canetti was a sociologist or what?
I'm not sure,
but not a dancer.
No, he was Hungarian. He won the Nobel Prize for Literature. He was not a dancer, no.
Right, so he studied.
But he studied, I guess anecdotally, I imagine. He studied the movement of crowds, and he wrote a lot about the formation of crowds.
Stephanie, this is your theme.
Yeah, it's bang on.
We need to do a story on Elias Canetti.
Yeah, it's a book worth reading.
Bring him back.
Yeah, great.
Now, how do you fund your outfit, Stephanie?
I became a company in 2014, but it's very fledgling and we operate on the smell of an oily rag.
But you've got an Australian Council Fellowship for
dance. I got
an
Australian Council Fellowship, yeah, which so is
they're worth
absolutely 80,000 thrilling.
A year, yeah. Is that right? Yeah.
No, across 2 years.
Oh, across 2 years. Oh, well, that's not so much, actually, is it?
It's not really.
Well, it's not really.
But I tell you what, it's a lot for me, yes.
And in just the process of applying for that kind of funding, how do you find that? Is it? Do you think it's sort of fair enough, or do you feel burdened by applying for grants?
Look, it's very hit and miss. I've put in applications that I thought were just watertight, and that I was quite confident that I'd get them for certain projects, and they failed, and then others that I wasn't so sure of have got up. So
we've all experienced this.
You never know.
Yeah, the idea you make up over a weekend you're not that committed to, you get the funding for.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's tricky.
But I feel grateful. I've had really great support in the last few years.
Have you got any bright ideas about how to fund, especially dance, better, Gideon?
Well, not immediately, but I can tell you, like Colossus, for instance, this getting together between the Melbourne Fringe Festival and Arts Centre Melbourne has been a really great way outside of the government funding structure for two organisations to create an environment for an artist like Stephanie Lake. The year before it was Discordia, a group of people. And so, you know, that is a way that organisations can do that. Because we've really had, just recently, what I've been reading about is the dismantling of Arts South Australia that's happened with a new state government there. Seems to me very similar to George Brandis and the partial dismantling of the Australia Council a few years back on a federal level, and this really hurts the independent artists and the small to medium sector the most, because the larger organisations are either bypassed or are able to move into other government structures. So
the point is that the Brandis prop policy was to fund what he called excellence, which meant that people who were in the sort of up-and-coming bracket were likely to miss out, because he was focused on the people who were at the top end, I guess.
Absolutely. And really what's really important in the arts, which I think some people don't realise, is that it's a very complex ecology. There's a real area where people learn and grow and develop.
Yeah, providing that environment.
And without that emphasis, you don't get that excellence at the end.
We've got to stop. Hey, Stephanie, thanks for coming in. Congratulations.
Oh, my pleasure. Thank you so
much. Bask in the glory.
Thrill. Thank you.
And Gideon, always a joy to have you here.
Thank you.
Gideon Obojanek, who joins us regularly to talk about dance here on The Hub. And Stephanie Lake's new work, Colossus, premieres on the 26th of September at Arts Centre Melbourne as part of the Melbourne Fringe Festival. And you'll find details on our website. And I'd love to hear from you if you're an artist. How have you found the experience applying for arts funding? Is it too onerous? Does it feel just about right? I'd love to know what you make of it. And of course, most of us are taxpayers and we're subsidising the arts. How do you feel about that? You can send us a voice memo on your smartphone. You just record it on your phone and then you send it to us at thehub@abc.net.au. That's thehub@abc.net.au. You'll find instructions on our website.